There's a couple of points which I just noted that, you know, a very Logopraxis kind of orientated in their statement, or process orientated. So one thing I highlighted here was in, so 5.5.2.1, but scarce, so just, so the subject here is that state and the nature of it, namely one of turmoil owing to the obscurity that exists regarding the things that are taking place. So, so there is, in, you know, in terms of general enlightenment, someone highlighted this, that there is this state of turmoil that, that exists with it. And so it's just accepting like these states are part of the deal, you know, like this is how these things get worked through. And then it says, but scarcely anyone can know anything about what that state is like unless he has come into a spiritual sphere and at the same time takes note of what is going on inside himself. So again, an emphasis on inner work. Subsection 2, where it talks about general enlightenment, that within a state of general enlightenment, turmoil exists initially, and that there is no respite until truths rooted in good are restored in their proper order. So that's the process. You can't avoid that. It's just how it works. I thought it was interesting in 5.2.2.4, we had a statement about outcomes there. So kind of in the first section of it, it's nearer the end, it says, at this particular point, it deals with the turmoil involved in consulting factual knowledge regarding things to come. For when that kind of obscurity exists, thought about what the outcome is to be instantly arises. So again, giving thought to the future and how things might play out or might not is all casting one's imagination into a process which isn't going to be overly enjoyable. It's just going to create anxiety for us. Again, just re-emphasizing that the text itself gives us the future, not in terms of future events, but in terms of states and processes. So we have been given insight into what has to come to pass in terms of interior work. And that is the most important kind of knowledge. That's the knowledge, if you like, that the ancients cultivated, because it pertains to real things. And whenever the text is talking about real things, it's talking about thoughts and affections, states of thoughts and affection. That is what is real. States of thought and affection. They organized into a complete human form. It's difficult for us to get our heads around that because we're so bodily anchored, but they are more real than what presents on the material and physical level. So, you know, we have to constantly remind ourselves about that. And then the very last number for this section, 5.2.2.5, topic is the idea of the removal of persons being an essential part of approaching spiritual life. That's why we emphasize not referring to people in the group. It's all built around this idea of angelic consciousness, which is the removal of the personal in order to extract the essence or the universal, because the universal applies to all. So we have a personal experience, but within that experience, the universals that can feed the group. It just says here, in the spiritual world, that is in heaven, angels' attention is fixed not on persons, but on spiritual realities. So things to do with the mind, thoughts and affections. For persons, narrow an idea down and focus it on some finite thing, whereas spiritual realities, that's states of mind, do not involve any such narrowing down or focus, but spread to what is infinite, and so to the Lord. This explains too why in heaven no one ever perceives a person mentioned in the word. Instead, they perceive the reality represented by that person. Nor for the same reason does anyone in heaven perceive a people or nation, only its essential nature. Indeed, in heaven, they have no knowledge at all of any historical detail in the word about any person, nation, or people. Consequently, they have no knowledge of who Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, or the people of Israel are, nor of who the Jewish people are. Instead, they perceive what is represented by Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the people of Israel, the Jewish people, and so on with everything else. This explains why angelic language has no limitations and is also a universal one compared with other languages. So that's a very profound statement about what angelic consciousness is like. And the implications here, of course, no person in the Word is known to angels. No Mary, no Joseph, no wise men, no Herod. And by implication, the person of Jesus is not something that they can conceive of. They perceive the Word and the divine human, which is infinite. So it opens things up. It's all about the interior life, not what happens in the exterior. The exterior is a representation. So when you think about it, if you can't conceive of Mary and Joseph or any of those events, then it has to be something else. It has to be something deeper at work. So the concept of the divine human is represented on the natural plane in the physical form of the Lord being born into the world, but that's a representation of deeper processes of the Word becoming alive within the collective human race, if you like, for all time, continually being born again.